It was a huge deal to be a Playboy centerfold back in the 70s, and Star Stowe was at the center of that.
Star was different from the other girls, and she loved that.
She probably had the feeling that this will last forever. Sadly, that rarely happens in this world.
Steph made it very clear to Star that this is what you had to do if you wanted to keep this lifestyle.
It was really an indoctrination. You were groomed to be a certain way.
He admitted that he drove her to a location and dropped her off for a rendezvous. It's quite a coincidence, wouldn't you think?
At this point, it was really starting to look like this could be the work of a serial killer.
If you go down the road of false promises, there's no way out.
Hey, y'all. Welcome to Docu Talk Through, the podcast where I talk you through the best documentaries in the streaming sphere. This is episode 22. And this is the fifth episode of the six-part series, The Playboy Murders. And the title of this episode 5 is The Girl with the Star Tattoo. So let's get into it. So we're starting out March 16, 1997 in Coral Springs, Florida. And it looks beautiful. We see this overhead drone shot and it's absolutely beautiful. And we are talking to Dennis Pickering in He's a Coral Springs detective. So he received a call to respond to a scene on March 16th. It was about 3:30 in the afternoon, and they have an unidentified white female, late 20s, maybe early 30s, and she was partially nude from the waist up, laying over some wood, like the tree line, behind an Eckerd drugstore. He said she was face down with one of her arms underneath her, and they show like a simulation, and they show this, the female with these tall leather boots on. And then we hear Pinkerton saying, when they examined the body, they found out that she had been strangled. And the cop also noticed that she had a star tattoo on her body. Okay, so there's the title, The Girl with the Star Tattoo. This Detective Pinkerton said he kiddingly looked over at one of the other detectives and said, you know, back in the 70s, there was a girl who was dating Gene Simmons who had a tattoo in the very same spot. She was a centerfold for Playboy. And it says, what are the odds of that? And we go from that to these centerfolds and magazine shots of this girl, or lady rather, who's modeling. And we hear Holly Madison talking about this person named Star Stowe. And Star Stowe was the Playmate of the Month in February of 1977. And these shots don't look like they're from the 70s. These look more recent. And Holly's talking about, of course, we've learned by now that it's a huge deal being a centerfold, especially back in the 70s. And we see another shot of this Star Stowe. And I guess in the 70s, the sexual revolution was at its height. And at the time, there was almost 6 million people reading Playboy every month. Yeah, reading. And we see this one. We're seeing all these old covers of Playboy magazine. And Holly is just equating it to how much more famous you were back then for just being in a magazine than probably now. It was a big deal back then to be in a magazine. And we see this, I guess, part of the centerfold. It says Starstruck. February's Star Stowe is full of surprises, all of them pleasant. And now we flash to this mansion. Is this the Playboy Mansion? Yeah, this is the Playboy Mansion. And then we hear this lady talking, saying she was working at the Playboy Mansion West in Holmby Hills. Oh, so there's more than one Playboy Mansion? She says she worked at the Playboy Mansion West in Holmby Hills. Oh, okay, no. So it's Humbly. The closed caption or the subtitles messed up. It's Humbly, not Holmby. And this lady who's talking name is Stella Tenenbaum. And she was Playboy Mansion's hostess from 1978 to 1980. And we see a picture of her. Man, we see an old picture of her. Time is a great equalizer, man. I'm telling you. Remember that when you stressing about whatever's going on. And just remember, man, time gets us all. So she was a front door hostess, and she would guide people throughout the party. And then, like, she's just saying, once you are in the house, you got to play the game. What game is she talking about? And she says Star was very good at it. And we see this picture of Star now. And, man, she don't look of age. She looked very, very young. So evidently this Star, she was good at whatever game we're going to get to. She loved the whole idea of the Playboy world. It was everything. And she wanted to climb to the top. We see some more vintage footage of outside of this Playboy mansion. We hear Holly Madison saying,
"The beginning of Star's story must have felt like an absolute dream come true. But she had no idea about the dark side of Playboy or the way things were going to go."
So evidently, according to Holly Madison, this is the first time I've ever heard someone associated with Playboy to say that there's a dark side of Playboy. And she just said, Star didn't know about the dark side of Playboy. And so far, we haven't heard anyone use that. I mean, we're on episode 5. That's the first time we heard someone associated with Playboy to use that. All right. And so now we go back to Tenenbaum. Tenenbaum saying Star Stowe was from Little Rock. And she had a small town girl vibe. And she does. She looks like she does. She has that small town girl look. Like she was probably the prettiest girl in the town, her and her sisters. And she wanted to be a dancer or a musician or both. And we hear this guy Olsen saying that, you know, Star got out of Arkansas as soon as she could. She wanted to explore. This dude's name is Jeff Olsen. And he was a childhood friend of Star Stowe. And she wanted to be a musician. She wanted to dance. She wanted to be in a rock group. She wanted to have that sort of fame and status. That entertainment fame and status. And as soon as she was 18, she left for Las Vegas. She got the hell up out of there. And that's one thing going from, you know, a small town to like Denver or even Chicago or New York. But Sin City, that has to be a shock. That has to be a shock to your system. Going from Little Rock, not to visit, but to leave, to live. So now we see Vegas and we see the glitz and all the lights and everything at night. I think every episode so far, I was trying to see that was Vegas a tie-in to every episode. But so now we're talking to Donna Pesdera, and she's a reporter from South Florida Sun Sentinel. And she's saying it was 1975 and she was at the Sahara Hotel in Vegas. And there's Gene Simmons without his makeup on. Gene Simmons of Kiss. And we see Gene Simmons. He's holding up this Kiss Alive 2 album folio. And she recognized him. So Star Stowe recognized him. And they ended up hooking up. And she called him adorable. See, what's adorable about fucking Gene Simmons? There's nothing adorable about Gene Simmons. I mean, there's a lot of other adjectives, but I want adorable. So her friend is saying that she meant it like he's nothing like he is in his makeup. He's nothing like his persona. Yeah, how in the hell she recognized Gene Simmons without his makeup on, man? Well, like now you would because of that. Didn't he have a reality show? But anyway, so we see Gene Simmons in his makeup and they're just, I guess, trying to show us sort of what she was meaning by that. And so I guess they ended up being together for 3 years. Wait a minute. So this is the same chick that the cop. Wait a minute. Oh, so this is way, way later. Okay. I'm slowing the uptake. So anyway, she was crazy about Gene Simmons and he was crazy about her evidently. So we're looking at these old pictures of Kiss and we see her right in the middle. And what's funny, it's so weird, man. Like what's funny is, it looks like this is a Photoshop picture of her in Kiss because I guess because I grew up with Kiss and my image of them is from back then, but I don't know who she is. I've never seen any pictures of her. So seeing her, she stands out more. I don't know. It's kind of weird. But so we hear Pat LaLama saying, when you saw them, they were the original famous couples. Yeah. So Gene, you know, Kiss was huge, man. Kiss was huge. I remember, I can't remember if I told this story, but Kiss was another group after I got baptized that my mom tried to stop me from listening to. And what's funny is I went one Halloween, me and my brother and cousins, we went, you know, for Halloween, we dressed up. I mean, we were in elementary. We dressed up as Kiss. You know, those rubber, you know, the costumes used to come in the pack. Got them at like Kmart. It was like this little plastic mask with a little rubber band to keep it on your head. And then the actual suit smelled like blow up swimming pool. It was like latex or something. But I remember when you opened it, it always smelled like a blow up swimming pool. Oh, do they still make those costumes? That's funny. And now I go to these cosplay conventions, and man, these what people do with costume now is crazy. So anyway, okay. So yeah, we just hear Tenenbaum talking more about like how at the peak of his career, she was everything to him. This star stuff. Is that her real name? Because if that's her real name, she already got a celebrity name, Star Stowe. Come on, man, you can't beat that. I mean, from all accounts, they were madly in love. We hear Pat LaLama saying that it wasn't just a romance between Gene Simmons and Star Stowe. That was actually a romance between Star and the entire band. She was their muse. I guess in his autobiography, Gene Simmons take credit for suggesting to Star that she send some pictures and stuff to Playboy. And so we hear her friend from back home. Well, actually, I'm not sure if it's a friend from back home, but just her friend. He's saying, yeah, she said Gene had sent some pictures in, and then this photographer came and took some shots, and then it kind of spiraled after that. And we hear Holly saying, yeah, if, you know, there's so many, Playboy received so many pictures of girls trying to be a part. But if they have an endorsement from somebody on it, like, you know, say Gene Simmons, then they move to the front of the line. It's not what you know, it's who you know. So Holly is saying, yeah, no doubt. If Gene Simmons had sent in a photo and had his name attached to it, everybody else just wait your turn. Olsen says, Helf saw the pictures and he loved it. And Olsen, that's her friend. And he Helf automatically wanted to make her a centerfold. Wow. So she was flown to Chicago, and that's where all the main shoots are in Chicago. So Helf flew her out there, and we hear Holly talking about in the 1970s, Chicago was still the home of Playboy in its main hub. Okay, so maybe it's changed since then. And we see this building, the headquarters, and it has Playboy on top of it, like in these gigantic letters. So the Playboy mansion in Chicago was definitely just as extravagant and decadent and crazy as the Playboy mansion in West L.A., okay, so that's okay. So West LA, that's the Humbly one. And then there's the main hub in Chicago. So Helf had it customized in the kind of way that nobody had ever seen before. You know, this Playboy mansion. And we see all these people just hanging around. I mean, these are black and white video of these people at the Playboy mansion. And it definitely looked different than, I guess, the one in the one we saw in California is more like a clubs type scenery. And this one is more of like luxury, like almost like in a James Bond movie where James Bond would catch somebody soaking in a hot tub and assassinate some big wig. It got that kind of feel. So he had this giant indoor pool and an underwater tiki bar. What? An underwater tiki bar. A fireman's pole, bowling alley. So now she's in Chicago for the centerfold. And then, you know, after that, it just seemed like her, according to this journalist, her life was just like a nonstop party. It seems like if you, again, just like in the real world, if you got an endorsement from something where nobody has to do any work to vet you or has to do less work to vet you, you're in the door. You're in the door. So it probably happened faster for her than a lot. You know, she was hanging out, partying with all kinds of rock stars. Remember, she's still this little young girl from Arkansas, and her mind is probably blown. We see her with Elton John, Rod Stewart. We see her with Blackley Lawless from Wasp. And she, all it, I mean, it's not hard to see why all this attention is paid on her. And so, you know, as Olsen is telling us, you know, she was telling him, or, you know, she was, yeah, he must have heard it from her. It's like, when she was doing these shoots, when she was at Playboy, she, whatever she asked for, she got it. She could get whatever she wanted. They catered to her. They treated her like royalty. She was just like an A-list movie star. She was a 20-year-old girl from Arkansas. And we see this picture of her when she was the Playmate of the Month. And she's 20, but in this Playboy of the Month, this picture, she looks like 16-year-old trying to look older. She looks so young, uncomfortably. Yeah, isn't that the top spot? Playboy Playmate of the Month? Yeah, that's the top spot. And we back to Pat LaLama. She's saying she personally knew a bunch of people, bunch of photographers who did a lot of shoots for Playboy. And they would express to her that many of the women were uncomfortable, insecure, afraid, not star-stow. She walked in there like she's been doing it all her life, ready to go. Like, this is what she's been waiting for. And according to Holly, her images stand out among like the most memorable ones in Playboy. Hers are the ones that stand out.
Definitely stands out among the history of all the Playboy centerfolds. It's very unique.
The whole motif of the spread was that she was this rock and roll girl, which was incredibly appropriate because that's what she was. There were pictures of rock stars on the walls behind her. She was holding this blue Rickenbacker bass guitar.
If you look at her face, you see the sultry baby face. So it was sort of this combination of the innocence, but yet the sultry, vixen-y vibe.
It's really nice to read her words in the article and kind of get a feel of who she is and what she was like. Here she says, once in LA, she recalls, while Gene was on stage, I flashed him. I just opened my jacket for a split second and I wasn't wearing anything underneath. Sometimes I just love to be naughty. Sometimes when I'm in the audience watching Gene perform, every once in a while during the concert, it seems like he's looking directly at me, and it's such a great feeling. To me, his music is what sex would sound like if you could hear it.
Sounds like she's sort of an exhibitionist, like she's just one of those wild girls. And we hear both Holly and the reporter saying that, Holly's saying, usually in the Playboy centerfolds, like even if the girl was nude, they would, you know, they wouldn't show the cooter. That's, in so many words, that's what she's saying. She's saying they would be from the side or whatever, but you wouldn't get no wide open cooter shot. And we hear the reporter saying Star was the first one with a tattoo. And we see this Star tattoo on her. I can't tell exactly what it is. Okay. So it's on an open leg. So she was the first to do a full front and the first to do the full front open leg. And it was, and I guess it was a turning of everything. We see this shot. It's like they have, you know, they censored out her cooter and her boobs. So she was the first to do this sort of shoot. And we see the guitar in her hand. So she was the first to sort of do that. And then we hear Tannenbaum saying they got more and more like soft porn than the tasteful pinup girl thing that they started out with. So this is when they started going over to the, I guess, getting with the times. So her centerfold came out in 1977 for the month of February. And then I guess it was huge. And she was the most popular girl in America for that month. That's what this Olsen dude is saying. So all the money and all the attention she got sort of overwhelmed her, according to Olsen. So I'm going from pretty much poverty to getting anything you want. So it was like people who win the lottery, you know, people who win go from living in the trailer park to you're a multimillionaire. What are you going to do with all that money? I mean, like, how are you going to manage that big ass come up? So LaLama saying she probably, especially being so young, man, like there's a certain, when you're young, you don't think about getting old. You don't think about, hey, what if this don't last? Especially when everything is based off how you look. Like I said earlier, time is the great equalizer, man. I don't give a shit what kind of money you got, what kind of resource you got. Maybe there'll be a time where you can just buy a whole new body and put yourself in there, put your consciousness in it. But, you know, yeah, I know there's a certain, I mean, she's in her 20s. Yeah, of course she's not going to be thinking about mortality. She's in her 20s. She's probably rich now. Every dude on the planet want her. She's living it up. But you know, sadly, nothing lasts forever. We've seen so far. I mean, what's the longest span these playgirls have? 2 years, 5 years? So we hear Petaluma. She brought up this ugly underbelly that we really haven't gotten into so far, but she's talking about this ugly, this darkness. So we hear a lot of people talking about, we hear a lot of secondary people. Sometimes you hear it from the, you definitely don't hear it from the people who are still at the pinnacle of their hotness. You don't hear them talking about the underbelly of Hollywood. And it's not a mistake. Anything, this Playboy shit, this is Hollywood. So we only hear people who have been blacklisted, who've been blackballed. That's who we hear about the underbelly from. We don't hear about the underbelly from people who, let me see, who's hot now? You don't hear The Rock talking about the darkness, the underbelly of Hollywood. You don't hear Kevin Hart talking about the darkness, the underbelly of Hollywood. You don't hear Brie Larson. You don't hear Jennifer Lawrence. You don't hear anybody who's hot, who's still in good standing, talking about the underbelly. And I bet it was the same with current Playboy bunnies. I guarantee the ones that were in it aren't, you know, when they get off work, talk about the dark underbelly. They may talk about it to each other, but not to anyone from the outside. That's why documentaries are made. Yeah, and we ever hear Tenenbaum saying, you know, it was a very scary time. It was a dangerous time. Underneath, behind closed doors, it was some crazy shit going on. And Star didn't understand much about that, much of what was going to happen. And as she's talking about this, we every time she say a negative word, we see drugs, we see powder, we see someone going into this room with this dude. I don't even know what's going on here. But she's saying Star didn't understand much about what would happen when you're old news, when you're done, when that rag is dirty to the point to where it can't even be washed no more. You throw that shit out. That's what she didn't understand, man. And there was nobody there to watch over. Oh, man, they got her dressed up like she's getting ready to go on the stroll. Wait, what is going on? So as she was saying that, this girl who went to this room was getting dressed, and it looked like she's going out on a stroll. So was she hooking? All right, so we back to her friend, and Olsen. He's saying,
Star went to her shoot in Chicago, and then she came to Los Angeles. She was living in Hollywood and at the mansion. Playboy was huge at that time. Everybody who was anybody was at the mansion. She used to tell me that she was hit on all the time. Everybody that went up there wanted to be with her.
If you drove down the street where the Playboy Mansion was situated, you would never imagine, oh my gosh, the stuff that goes on behind those walls.
I hope this won't be a trash recording. This refrigerator in this hotel is loud as hell. Anyway, so we hear Tenenbaum. She says it was like an open house. She says it was like a whole open house all the time, 24/7. So what does that mean? Open house, that anybody can come in? What does that mean? And we see these pictures of some more pictures of Hef standing in front of the lawn of this mansion. We see this like limo in the background. And Madison is saying when people think of Playboy, when they think of Playboy and all the crazy stories from the mansion, it stems from all the shit that went on in the 70s. And Holly says, even in Hollywood, nobody's seen the type of debauchery that goes on in the Playboy world. Like even on Hollywood standards, this shit was like crazy. And she said there would just be like orgies going on in the grotto. Of course, no, she was probably a part of them. So I think the grotto was described somewhere else in one of these other episodes. So the cave, I think someone described it as like a cave or something like that. That was in that. They show pictures of it or video of girls. Just it's like when you go to, you know how you go to these resorts, and if they have like, I'm just going by what the pictures I saw. It looked like it looks like the swim up bar cave thing at a resort. A few resorts I've been to, they've had that, like the swim up bar. And she's saying there would be like orgies just going on in the grotto, in that little cave. It's people just mucking up the waters. All kinds of crazy things happening upstairs. Just like a freak show, a freak fest. When Star first got there, she was literally like a little girl, like a little flower child. And that's what Tenenbaum said. Remember, she was only like, what, 19, 20? And she said Star was friends with a lot of different girls in the house. And that was unusual because it was kind of a catty atmosphere. I imagine it. All that cooter around there. It was just a catty atmosphere. It was like hierarchies. And Star being a playmate, so that made her upper level. That's crazy. Even with it, that's crazy how class and structure in some sort of anything people can hate on another group for, you're going to make. Even in a house where everybody's pretty enough, beautiful enough to be there, you got picked to be there. Even in that environment, there's like, oh, I'm pretty, but I'm also the playmate. I'm at playmate status. And then what you have, what, hostess there at the bottom. And, you know, it's just so crazy. Humans, we make a hierarchy. Animals, feel like the animals, we make a hierarchy out of anything, out of any situation, any demographic, no matter what it is. You can be, I bet even with identical twins, all the same sex, the same gender, it'll be the hierarchy, be who was born at whatever time. But evidently, Star, she tried to fraternize with everybody. And so we met this guy. He was Hugh Hefner's personal valet. His name is Stefan Tenenbaum. What? Wait, Stefan Tenenbaum? Is he relation to the hostess Tenenbaum chick? So he was the chauffeur from 1978 to 1982. So he's saying he and Star would have conversations because she found out that he was from Maryland and she was from Arkansas. And we see another picture of him. He has on a leopard bandana around his head, leopard print bandana, a leopard shirt and like an opera mask on his face. Or, well, it's pushed up on his head. So he's from Maryland, she's from Arkansas, and they would talk about Southern food and things like that. One of the main rules of the mansion was they were not allowed to talk to any of the girls. So you just drive. You don't do no talking. But he did some talking. So they had to all do this shit in secret. They had to, you know, in the pantry where the butlers hang out. So I guess they put that in there to show how either how much of a rule breaker she is or how down to earth she is, because she didn't abide by that cattiness in the house. She just was friends with whoever she wants to be friends with, and she didn't abide by that you don't talk to the help. We hear LaLama saying, being Miss February Centerfold 1977, she later on becomes Playboy Japan Centerfold of the Year. Playboy, I didn't even think about other country Playboy. And we see this with this Japanese writing, and we see her in this little cameo silhouette type thing, and we see her picture. But you can definitely tell it's in like a different style. So she's top status. She's top billing right now. So we back to the male Tenenbaum. He's saying, the chauffeur, he's saying Star was different from the other girls that were living in the house. She knew she was more valuable to the Playboy magazine than they were. She had so many fans from her centerfolds, from her pictorials, and probably from dating Gene Simmons. And they even had a nickname for her. They called her El Tigre. El Tigre. Let me try to say it again. El Tigre. Because she was feisty and she loved it. She was a fighter. And Holly is saying,
sometimes when we're young, we feel like we're more invincible than we are. But I don't think there's any way Star could have been prepared for the type of debauchery that awaited her.
The parties were just extravagant. And Star and all the starlets followed Hefner around in the party. It was unreal. I remember Star showed up, I think it was Midsummer Night's Dream party, with a pacifier and a baby diaper and nothing else. She did what nobody else would do.
We see her standing next to this dude that looks like Burt Reynolds, and she don't have him on the top, and she has on like, yeah, just a diaper. And it looks like a bottle, like a baby's bottle in her hand. She don't have on any top, just a diaper. Well, people already seen her tits. They already seen her cooch. So, you know, she's the world, the whole U.S. and at least Japan has seen it. So, I mean, I don't know why that would be such a surprise. So Star was always around Hef's table. I guess she was just like one of his top picks. That means she's at his table. She was one of the main beautiful girls there. Yeah, Hef was close to all of the most beautiful girls. And I guess he liked her personality also. And for his weird looking ass to be seen with her, of course, she's arm candy for him, just like all those other girls are. So I guess in Star's era, there was a bunch of strict rules. So I guess there was more strict rules back then than there are now. And the playmates had to follow these rules. So the rules were basically that you were Hefner's girls. Nobody else can have you. If you were playmate of the month, that was it. You had to have scheduled sex with Hefner privately 2 days a week. What? So this is the first time they've straight out said this. I know he had his 7 girlfriends, but so all the playmates. So pretty much, if you were a playmate, you fucked Hef. That's what she just said. You were scheduled to have sex twice a week with Hefner. So she was with Gene, but she told her friend that she slept with Hef more than once. And then she said she thinks she felt she had to do it. Well, yeah, that's part of the rules. So Olsen is saying that she felt she had to do it. It's just like a pimp. The pimp got to get the first taste before you put you out on the street. He got to turn you out. So that's the same thing as this. Like, but Hef does it different. You get the money stuff. Now, in order to keep that, you got to come and visit old Uncle Hef. So Olsen is saying she felt she had to do that. And we Tannenbaum is saying it was a rule that you had to do that. So that is crazy, man, to hear that. Yeah, I mean, it's like one of those things when you were growing up, you knew Hef was banging all those chicks, but just to hear it. So Olsen is saying it wasn't just with Hef. It was anybody that came there that was important. So anyone that wanted to taste you, it was just like any important person that showed up to the mansion. If he chose her, she had to sleep with him. Hef made it very clear that this it had to be done. You got to fuck me and whoever else I say to fuck. And we hear Stella Tannenbaum saying it was grooming. It was an indoctrination. It was a certain way you had to be groomed. And that was just normal. And Star would be an ambassador for Hefner and go to different advertising account executives and do a lot of smoozing, do a lot of pleasing men. She was the one he sent out to get deals and shit done. Like if Hef needs something, he call up Bill Gates. At the time, it wouldn't be Bill Gates at the time. Who? Any big CEO, if he needed something, say the cops or the city came down with some new ordinance that's going to fix his mansion, fix his business. He just sends Star over to the boss of ordinances and say, hey, I'm here to make sure that you don't dezone this zip code or this area and leave the mansion alone. that's what they're making it seem like. And he probably had a fleet of them. He probably had a fleet of women he sent out to get favors done. And Star stole along with anyone you chose, they would just play things. And we hear Stella Tannenbaum saying you can't keep that lifestyle up and be okay and wake up and feel good. Well, you can if you don't have any morals, if you don't have any self-esteem, if you don't have any ethics, if you don't have any of that, sure you can. It's just the fact if you do have any of that, those characteristics, then yeah, you're going to have a problem. So she went back and forth from happy, depressed, and Olsen is saying he could see everything that was being forced on her. Yeah, so it's like when you get something new, when you get that new thing, or when you want something new. When you were a kid, you want something new. You tell your mom, you'll do anything. I'll clean up my room for 200 days straight if you can get me this. She was probably like that in the beginning. But then everything gets old. Everything becomes monotonous. That life's that nothing, you that high don't stay. So once realism set in, you know, it's fun to do that one time, twice, but you like, I got to do this shit all the time. I'm tired. And that's when the depression set in. It's like, man, what did I get myself into? It's like when you around people and you all doing the same thing, nobody's special anymore. You know what I mean? Nobody, when she was a sweet little innocent Arkansas girl, she was special. But now she's just another playmate and you got to do all the same shit that everybody else did. You're no longer special. You're just like everybody else in the group. And Olsen says being forced to sleep with men. I don't think nobody's forcing her. That's just a stipulation if you want to keep doing what you're doing. if you want to keep this lifestyle. If you don't want to keep this lifestyle, don't do what health makes you do. She wasn't kidnapped and chained. She's not chained up in a mansion. At least, well, I don't. Maybe they're gonna come later, but so far nobody put a gun to her head. Nobody's chained her to a bed. None of that. And Olsen is saying she didn't want to sleep with these guys. They were gross. But she was told to, you got to drug that shit off and drink that shit off. So get yourself out of your head. Get some of these narcotics and this alcohol up in you and go do what you got to do. So again, nothing stays the same. So what got her there as far as alcohol and drugs when she first started is going to take more. It's going to take more to get her to do these same things. It's going to take more, you know? It's like a cycle. That's the trap. It's a cycle. So that's what she fell into. And we're back to Tannenbaum. She's saying they had an extensive open bar, open drugs all the time. There was always drugs. There's an unlimited amount of alcohol, unlimited amount of drugs. There were certain places they would keep the drugs, and Star would go to these places. She knew how to open the box. She knew where to open the box. She would take out snoot, snoot, toot, toot, snort, snort. And Hefner would usually get a girl's Quaaludes. That was his thing, Quaaludes. I don't even really know what Quaaludes are. I've heard of Quaaludes from old shows, but I don't even know what Quaaludes are. And again, man, I'm looking at this picture of Hugh Hefner. Hugh Hefner must knew that he was never going to get a woman based on his looks. So he was like, I got to do something to surround myself with women and be able to get so much power. So anyway, so we see Hugh Hefner, was, you know, again, surrounded by these women. Okay, so Quaaludes, Olsen is saying it was the date rape drug, basically. And, it will make her relax, make her lethargic, make her, yeah, man, lose her inhibition. That's what it's for. So that's probably what all those women were on. So after a year of all the fame and all the glamour and everything in the fast lane and the sex and the orgies, it turned her into just, now that innocence is gone, man. Now she got that 40-yard stare. Now she's just kind of a shell. And being that she's all, you know, she's on Mars compared to where she's from. And she's solo. There's nobody else like her. I don't know if there's any new girls that's like the same with her, but she don't have anyone to see that she's going down a dark road. She probably don't even have anyone to care enough. You know, everybody's there is in the same thing. So nobody's sober. Nobody, you know what I mean? Like if you around the same people that are doing the same debaucherous shit as you, nobody notices when one person is going down faster than the other. And so we hear Stella Tannenbaum saying that unlike other girls that had a line that they wouldn't cross or had a limit that they will reach, Star didn't have that limit. She was one of those types that she's going to go until she either pass out or die. She said Star needed to be put in rehab, but it wasn't an option because you can't be normal and sober and live that lifestyle. You got to have all that stuff to lower your inhibitions and take you out of your mind so you can act that way. So you can do that. Do whatever it is they have her doing or whatever it is she thinks she has to do. Just being normal and sober, she can do it. Just to drown out all the hell and all the shit she has to go through. And we hear the other Tannenbaum, the chauffeur, she told him that she thinks she's addicted to coke because she can't sleep. And so she's asking this dude, how does she go cold turkey? So she wanted to get out of it. She wanted to stop, but it looked like she was in an environment that she couldn't. And so the relationship with Gene was sort of up in the air because Gene just didn't want her. I mean, this is Gene Simmons. He didn't just want her. He would go to the mansion and I guess he would be with other girls and she wanted him all to herself. But man, talking about a rock star, shit, you can't get more of a rock star than Kiss. And so what she said is Gene Simmons, I don't know if this is like historic knowledge, but according to the Stephen Tannenbaum, Star told him that Gene wanted a pure girl. So I guess Gene didn't even do drugs. Gene Simmons didn't do drugs. So when he found out that she was doing all kinds of coke and shit at the mansion, he got angry with her. So wait a minute. So he didn't get angry at all the dudes she was fucking, but he got mad at her doing the drugs?
Who knows what goes on behind closed doors, but it is understood that the relationship became quite difficult. and he eventually moved on.
Star had such a hard time when it was over with Jean. That whole flower child thing kind of disappeared and she became extremely wild, you know, just really out of control. It was really sad to watch.
I don't think Star could have ever imagined in her wildest dreams that her decision to go to Playboy would have a deadly outcome.
So old girl was out there so bad that she was too wild for a rock star, like a true to life rock star. Like, people use rock star now when they're talking about like pop stars and shit. Like, they call, you know, Taylor Swift a rock star, or you know what I mean. Like, but no, these were she was too wild for Kiss, for Gene Simmons. That is crazy. Especially to be so young, man. She must have been fucking wild. She must have been out there. So now we are in 1978 and we are in Hollywood, California. And we see more reenactments of Star getting photographed. And we hear Stella Tannenbaum. Stella Tannenbaum, being that she's the hostess, along just like with the other Tannenbaum, Steph. What is his name? Steph. Steph and Stella. Wait a minute. Was it Steph? Anyway, these two people were workers. So I imagine, especially because he had to drive, he was the chauffeur, I imagine he had to stay sober. And being that she's the hostess, I imagine that she has to stay sober. So I'm taking their word, like, in this documentary, as they were like the fly on the wall. You know, especially since they weren't even supposed to. Actually, I don't know about Stella, but I know the chauffeur guy, he wasn't even supposed to be talking to any of the girls. So all this knowledge he got was done in total confidence, like behind the scenes. Stella saying after Star got her main centerfold and all the work that she had done for that first year, she realized that there was another crew coming up, like another crew of girls. You got to keep that shit fresh. So there was, and Stella saying there was always turnover. So your time to shine is fleeting, like fast. And we've sort of seen this same sentiment with past episodes, especially at actually being the playmate. Once you peak, what else is there to do? I guess you could do other stuff within the Playboy organization. You're getting older every year. You know that age, you age out early, like quick before you're 26, 27. So she started to realize this. And Stella saying, because once you start to lose that perfect 18, 19-year-old skin, see, even now we hear it even younger. Damn. They see you're not that fresh, young girl next door look. You're pretty much, I mean, it's amazing how we are in this, like nowadays, you know, 2023, we're in this Me Too movement. I mean, I'm looking at this picture. It's just Hef. Hef is the only guy in a sea of women. And it's like, do they not have any other ambition? Like, I mean, especially if you watch this documentary, they make it seem like these girls are chained to the Playboy Mansion, force-fed drugs and alcohol, or if like someone was groomed at an early age. Remember, she left Arkansas on her own, and maybe she was naive, but still, man, it's like a lot of this stuff. Like if I say, if I go on a dating app, right, and I put on a dating app, I'm looking for a woman who's submissive, who's going to cook clean, who's going to have 12 kids, who's going to wear nothing but dresses. If I put all that shit out there, then I have someone to whatever. I don't know how the dating apps or whatever websites work, but if somebody like say, hey, yeah, I'm down for that. And then we hook up, we marry, and then I stick to the same shit that I said I want. But then she like, you know, people on the outside see that and then they think I forced her into this. She volunteered. She signed up for it. So just like with this, these girls signing up for it. Like the first time she takes drugs can't be the first time she saw it going on. Like, you know what I mean? Like you can't be a part of Playboy and then some drugs put in your front of your face and you never saw it going on before or you never heard about it before. That I don't think it happens like that. I think you know it's coming, and then you got to make a decision. Either you want to keep this lifestyle and you do what they say you got to do,
Or you don't, and you leave, and you go fucking get a job. Go do something else. Go be a model. Just go be a regular model. You know what I mean? Like, I guess I'm going in on this because this is the fifth episode, and this is the first time that they talk about this as if... Now I'm not going... I know Hugh Hefner was probably a fucking scumbag in certain ways. I'm not doubting that, especially because of the era, the times. And you know, he had seven girlfriends, but the scumbaggery, that's what you signed up for. It's not, you know, I don't think he did some Weinstein shit and tricked people into thinking, hey, come for an audition. Then you get there for an audition. And all of a sudden he got his turtle head out. I don't think it happened like that. I think Hef was so confident. He said, this is what's got to happen if you want this. I made the first approval. Your pictures, you're hot, whatever. But in order to keep this, you got to do these things. And this is the first episode we're actually hearing about stuff like that, even though you sort of assume shit like that going on. Just like with Hollywood. I think every single actor in Hollywood has done some stuff like this, especially the young ones. Like, it's no surprise when you hear about when Usher was whatever, 12, 13, 14, 15, hanging out with fucking P. Diddy. He was doing some foul shit at a young age. Who's that surprising? Nobody's surprised by that. You hanging around adults doing adult shit. So who's surprised by that? Who's surprised by bodybuilders using steroids? Who the fuck is surprised by that? Like Ronnie Coleman, my most favorite bodybuilder of all time, even to this day. That dude's personality is just awesome. You go watch the documentary, King Coleman. And, you know, he with his operations and his back going out and shit. I don't think he ever talked about steroids, but come on, man. The dude is superhuman size. You think you can get like that just by fucking eating 16 chicken breasts a day and 14 apples? No. So it's just like nobody's surprised by it. It's just like this stuff. This dude surrounded, I don't think he ever been married. I don't think Hugh Hefner ever been married. I don't even know if he has any kids or anything, but it's just this dude, all these fucking women. You think he's not fucking like whoever he wants? And you think there's no drugs, no partying and alcohol and all that shit going on? You got to be out of your brain. You got to be out of your mind to think that's not happening. So I'm not buying this innocent vixen. Stella's continuing on saying, like, what she's saying is like, yeah, you're just a child, but in their world, you're used up. Yeah, man. But that's in life in general, man. You know, that's why women just have to carry themselves a little bit different than men. That's just the truth of it. Yeah, there's a double standard out there. That's just facts. When women go out there and do shit like this, like what's in this documentary, even outside of this, you know, where you have to have this look. When you go and do this stuff and then you go back to the real world and people know about it, yeah, you consider a old dirty wash rag. That's just the nature of it, man. That's just the truth of it. So, but that's why you got to be smart about it. There was one episode, she was smart about it, but she was dumb about it. The very first episode, the one where her husband ended up getting murdered by this fan that she led on. She was doing it right. And same with the Black Bart episode. She didn't go into the dark side. At least they didn't mention it. She didn't go down this dark path. She was a fucking teacher. I mean, you had to have some sense about you if you being a Playboy, working at the Playboy Mansion at night and then being a teacher in daytime. She got out of it. It wasn't until later where she, you know, got caught up and had her husband murdered. So, yeah, man, I think it's a case-by-case basis. I don't think, you know, me just watching these documentaries, I mean, I know there's pressure to want to have that top spot, but I don't know. Yeah, so she got to the point where, you know, she's the new crew's coming in. She's getting ready to be aged out. So what's her next move? And we hear Holly Madison, the expert in all of this. She's talking about...
There was a real disconnect in the Playboy world because they expect Star to be this party girl. But then the second she develops a problem with it, she's the problem. It was like that even when I was there. It was seen as like a character flaw within that person. So it was a really weird, hypocritical attitude.
Okay, so now we 1980, Hollywood, California. We hear Olsen saying 3 years after her centerfold came out, things were going downhill very fast for Star. She couldn't handle everything that was going on. And then evidently she got abusive with Hef and told him to piss off and she didn't need him. And so she started sort of standing up for herself. And, you know, this Olsen got her friends saying that's the one person you can't get abusive with. So she started to get mouthy and get abusive with the top dog. And just like that, Everything with Playboy turned against her. Remember, in all the previous episodes also, Playboy don't want no dirty marks on him. The only dirt they want on him is the dirt they keep inside those mansion walls. So he don't want no talking shit and being abusive toward him. He's the playmate maker. So they turned against her. And that was the end for her. That was the end of her playboyness. They didn't want her at the mansion anymore. She was basically cut off from everything. Advertising, promotions, personal appearances, everything. Threw away like used up rag. All of her income now is completely turned off. She don't have anything to fall back on because she thought she was going to do this shit for the rest of her life, I guess. And we hear Holly Messer saying like, even when the bad shit was going on at the mansion with her, that's all she knew. She didn't have any other ambition when she left Little Rock, Arkansas, except for to be the girl in whatever way possible, modeling, Playboy, whatever. I don't even think when she left, she wanted to be a part of Playboy. I think she left to model. But shit, she got the top. What better modeling gig than Playboy? So she just fell into that. So he probably thought her shit didn't stink, and now she's cut off. The Playboy people, that world, that was the only people she knew in California, in LA, in Hollywood. She didn't have any outside resources. They haven't mentioned her family. Only person they mention that's like knows her is this Olsen guy, and they keep calling him friend, but they don't say childhood friend, or they don't say, you know, whatever. All the other episodes, past episodes, so they had friends. They have friends or a family member or something like that to talk for them. She don't have any family members talking for her. And the friend is a dude. She don't even have any like girlfriends speaking for her in this episode. So she didn't have any outside resources. And now she's 22. So she just got over the 21 year hump. She's 22 years old, man. She still got a lot of life ahead of her. You know, 22, most regular people aren't figuring shit out to 22, you know? Yeah, man, 22, my oldest daughter is 22. And she just left for a work trip a day after I left for a work trip. She left for a work trip and, you know, she's 22 and I've been checking up on her and shit like that. If my daughter told me she just wanted to move somewhere I would freak the fuck out, man. So I'm thinking she must didn't have a close-knit relationship with her family for her to just to leave and go to Las Vegas, no less. Las Vegas? Anyway, so she's 22 years old. She's now addicted to drugs. She's addicted to alcohol. And she's just floating. She's just out there now. So she stayed in L.A. for a little bit longer. But the Playboy, with all his power, the Playboy organization, put a stigma on her in her name. So they pretty much blackballed her. And no one really wanted to hire her or do anything with her because, you know, they're a powerful company and they just blackballed her. So all the people that she met, like Gene Simmons, Rod Stewart, then, you know, they didn't try to contact her. There were no calls coming from them. They used her up, and now, you know, she started to realize it was all over with. It came hard and fast. And that shit went hard and fast. So she went back to Las Vegas. And now they're showing this wedding chapel, the Candlelight Wedding Chapel. And so in 1981, she married. Wait a minute. A year later, after she got kicked out of Playboy, so it's 1981 now. So she marries Peter Maligo, who was an aspiring musician, a rock musician. And she got pregnant. They had a son. Within a couple of days after giving birth, he forced her to go out and start stripping. Okay, so now, see, let this be a cautionary tale. So now she got a pimp / husband, but he forced her to go out and start stripping. So she goes from Playboy to stripping in Vegas. And we see these topless bars and shit like that. So he put her out there, put her on the pole to make some money. And Olsen, her friend Olsen, is saying she made decent money. So she supported her family easily. And, you know, people still wanted to see a centerfold. Think about this. And I'm pretty sure they used that. Star Stowe, ex-Playboy centerfold, now stripping. I want to know if that's common. Is that a common transition? Probably either that or porn. Like, if you get banished from Playboy. I don't even know any Playboy
models. I know Vanessa Williams. That's really, that's the only name I know. Holly Madison. But I don't know. I don't even think, even when I used to, when I would get Playboy magazines, not, well, I never had a subscription, but if a roommate or something had a, I don't even think I even looked at the name. I don't think I looked at the name. Who looks at the names? So she's stripping and they still wanted to see the star that was at her bikini line. Now they're showing this actor portraying Star, and we see, now I can see a better shot of where that tattoo is. So it's right on the inside hip, right above and to the right of the cooch bone. So that was her gimmick, and evidently it worked. So she became popular on the pole. So most of her friends said that this relationship with this guy, this Peter Maligo guy, was not great. Of course it's not great, man. What does she know about a real relationship? He put her on the pole. What kind of respect and dignity does he have towards her if he making a mom go out there and get on the pole instead of him having four fucking jobs?
One of the biggest challenges of making money off of the way that you look is eventually that fades.
When the stripping jobs in Vegas started drying up, she moved to Fort Lauderdale with her son in order to make a living. A lot of the clubs around here thought that she was sort of a celebrity because she had been in Playboy. And so that was sort of an attraction.
Okay, now it's 1986, moving right along, and we are in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. So she's moved here with her son, and she's stripping in Florida now. But as she get older, you know, that rock and roll lifestyle with the alcohol, the drug, it started catching up with her. That shit takes a toll on your body. Yeah, when you're young, you can handle it, but oof, it lingers, man. It lingers. So let me see. How old would she be now? So it was, she was 22. Was it 1980 she was 22? So she's still under 30. Yeah, so she hasn't even hit 30 yet. But, I mean, if she was doing hard drugs and doing that lifestyle for like every day, no time off, yeah, she in age, she's under 30, but her body's probably 68. Okay, so she is 30. So we hear Holly Madison saying, it must have been hard for Star to be 30 and not being booked at the exotic dancing clubs, at the strip clubs. Fuck, they keep saying dancing, stripping. So I guess she was even having a hard time, even with her you know, minor celebrity, it was still hard for her to get gigs. I wish they would show a picture of what she looked like at 30, because at 20, she looked 15. So I want to know what she looked like. Like, did it go downhill quick or what? They really haven't shown any, like, a lot of pictures of her. The only pictures they showed were like the few at the beginning, and they just keep cycling through those same photos. They showed the same pictures, like there weren't a lot of pictures of her. There had to be a lot of pictures of her, but they're not showing a lot of them. Yeah, they keep showing the same pictures. So Holly is saying, from an outside perspective, it seems like there could be so many options. But when your self-esteem is at a certain place and you've been told for so many years you're only good for one thing, it can feel very differently. Yeah, I mean, she never, all her self-worth came from other people. She never gained her own identity or self-worth. It all, you know, people propped her up because she was beautiful. She was young, had that look. So she was propped up by all these scumbag ass dudes. You know what I mean? So like, that's why, like, I had the conversation with my daughter. Like, when she asked me, they asked me, does this look nice or something like that? Or, like, you know, an outfit. And I asked them, do you think it look nice or do you like it? And she's like, yeah. And then as she got older, especially my youngest, as she got older, she said, Dad, sometimes I just like to hear you say, you look beautiful. But my whole thing was I wanted them to know when they look, you know, whatever they look like, whatever they're trying to do, that's what it is.
that's what you want. You know what I mean? Like, I guess women just need some of that sometimes. And sometimes a woman can go so long and it only takes one dude that knows how to manipulate certain women. I mean, that's how, you know, you hear about this all the time in true crime. Like, on the outside, you'd be like that line worked. Like, you're here like, well, she met him and at the gas station and she's pumping gas. And he said, and like, that shit worked. But sometimes, and I guess just because I'm a good dude, I couldn't see that shit working because I don't use lines. You know what I mean? I never use lines. So to me, it's like, how do women fall for that? But they do. And so this was the thing with her. She never had her own self-worth or self-esteem. She was so young when she left. It all came from these dudes not giving a shit about her personality. They just wanted her to stay drugged up and drunk and keep her legs open and keep smiling for that camera. That's it. And then when she started to fight against that, they kicked out. And now she, just like Holly saying, you would think somebody like her, even though she got blackballed in Hollywood and with Playboy, all over the world, there are strip clubs. If that's going to be your thing, or even, well, I guess modeling gigs probably, because Playboy probably got their hands in every sort of modeling organization there is, but she didn't think anybody would want her. So, she needed to pay the bills. She needed to have a roof over her head. So I'm thinking, like I said earlier, I'm thinking she's going to start tricking. So she didn't have this, and we hear Pat LaLama saying she didn't have the body and the beauty by Hollywood standards anymore, but she still could have sex and still make money. So, okay, by using her body for sex. Okay, so that's what she started doing, man. So Star Stowe, she became a prostitute. She was out on the stroll. I knew it because I saw this reenactment earlier. This chick was getting dressed like she was about to go hit the streets, and that's exactly what it is. So this girl go from being a playboy to tricking on the street. And so we hear her friend Olsen saying,
I told her, that's a definite no-no. You got to do something else. You've already gone through that with Playboy. And then she'd say, what can I do? A couple of times when I went to see her at the house and she was already drinking and doing drugs, I would say to her, you know, this is not your life. You know, you can't do this. It's going to take its toll on you. And she just said, I can handle it. I can quit anytime I want, but you can't. She had hoped that she might be able to stop someday, but she needed to drink and do drugs so she didn't have to think about it and didn't have to feel.
I wonder why she wouldn't just go be like a high class or high price escort instead of on the streets. Or at a minimum, go back to Vegas and go work at a brothel or something like that. Anyway, so, and we see this reenactment of her laying on the couch. She looks strung out. She looked drugged up. And she's just tossing and turning on this couch. So now it's 1988, still in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. And so she sent her son back home to Arkansas with her mom because she just felt like he deserved a better upbringing. Well, yeah. See his mom do tricks, turn tricks and fucking drugged up and coked up and drunk. Yeah, man, he deserve a better life because he see that shit and he gonna think that's how women's supposed to be. So I guess by this time she had already been a prostitute for a number of years. And then in 1990, she got jailed for drug possession. And okay, so now we see a mugshot. And I can't, this mugshot is like black and white. I can't really see what she looked like from this. This is like, this picture looked like it's from 1978. So when she got put in jail, she wrote a letter to her best friend, Mitchie Stone. So she does have a best friend named Mitchie Stone. And so somehow this journalist got this letter and she's reading some of the letter.
I had such high hopes and now they're gone. I did it to myself and it's a nightmare. But when I get home, I get to go be the old me. I get to be by my son and go to church and it will be good someday.
So we hear Holly Madison saying, unfortunately, Star was not able to do that. She was not able to turn her life around. I mean, just so many demons and so much addiction. That shit can't stop cold turkey. You can't just, I mean, if that's the case, there would be no rehab centers. You know, there would be no AA. But it seemed like so far she hadn't decided to put herself in one of those or anything like that. So Holly is putting it all on Playboy. He's like, this shit all originated from my time at Playboy. And we see this reenactment. She's back on the street. And it's like, you know, she may want to change, but when that rent is due, she got to go do whatever she thinks she can to make money. So now we have March 15th, 1997, Coral Springs, Florida. So almost 20 years to the day since her centerfold came out. Wait a minute, is that right? 20 years? Wow, okay. So almost 20 years to the day since her centerfold came out, Star was last seen getting into a car in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, with a dude. You know, she's on the street. A John come by, picks her up, and we see this John. We don't see his face. It's some dude with a trucker hat on. He got on a hoodie, and this is like a, what is this, like a Caprice Classic, this car she's getting in. And she drives away, and the next day, Star is found dead. So now we still in March 1997. They said Fort Lauderdale, but it says Coral Springs, Florida. So we see this headline. It says, Stars Fall, A Dark Tale After World of Glamour. It didn't say this. The tale of how Star fell. So they're going to use that, make whatever kind of puns and shit, metaphors and shit they can use with Star. So we hear Olsen saying that, you know, he was heartbroken. Nobody deserved to be murdered, especially somebody who was trying to get on the right track. And I guess he told her that she was going to try. And he believed her at some point that she wanted to change. Well, yeah, you can want to change. But so we back to Detective Pickering. And he called her mom on March 17th. And when he told her, you know, they found Star dead, she was crying uncontrollably. And so her mom is the one that told them about her friend, Mitchie Stone. And so they spoke with Mitchie, and she said she was afraid for her. She was trying to get Star out of the lifestyle. And so Mitchie told them about an ex-boyfriend that she had. They had broken up about 3 weeks prior to her being, you know, disappearing and being found dead. So, okay, so Star was living with Mitch. So we hear Pazdera, the journalist, saying Star was living with Mitchie at the time of her death. Okay, so this wasn't somebody from back home. This was somebody in Florida that she was friends with. Okay, so she broke up with this boyfriend they were talking about. And so she moved in with Mitchie Stone. And I guess the relationship started off good, but then a couple of days before Star was found murdered, they got into a big fight. And she ended up with a nasty bump on her head. So he was beating on her, and she got away, and that's how she ended up at Mitchie Stone's house. So the cops ended up finding this dude and find out that he was actually arrested for domestic violence. And they, you know, of course he's a suspect now. So they thought, you know, it was going to be easy to find him, but the charges for his domestic violence was dropped because the witnesses all said that he never did strike her. She was so hot, she was so intoxicated that she fell down. Okay, so he didn't even hit her. She was just, you know, being her normal self, drunk, high, and she fell down and bumped her head. And the detective is saying that this dude, had a clear love for her. He was upset. He definitely seemed like he cared about her. And they don't think he had the wherewithal to do something like that. So they eliminated him as a suspect. Remember, man, the ex-boyfriend, the boyfriend, the spouse, the significant other, whatever, that's the first suspect. So they already eliminated this dude. Now, she does have an ex-husband, but I think he's in Vegas somewhere, right? But shit, she's out there. She's prostituting. Did they mention that? She got probably half of Fort Lauderdale as suspects. I mean, can you imagine that? You go pick up a prostitute and it's Gene Simmons' ex-girlfriend? How fucking crazy is that? How crazy is that? You go pick up a prostitute and you can go on eBay and buy an old Playboy with her centerfold. That's crazy. So the police were working out, working through their leads. They were out there getting rid of, like eliminating suspects and everything, handing out flyers, beating the streets, doing whatever they can to find out who
saw what happened. Who was around when she got picked up in their car? And being that she was just found, it looked like from the video, it looked like she was just found on the side of a road, not even like secluded. So it seemed like somebody would, that there should be an easy witness. But so far, they haven't found anybody. They're knocking on doors, just trying to find out who knows what. So they end up going to the strip where she worked. They hit every single bar. They hit every single hotel. They hit every single pawn shop. They spent hundreds of hours on this, on trying to find out what happened and or if anybody even saw her. And they didn't find anything, man. Like, nobody saw Jack. So what the cops did end up finding out, they found out about another boyfriend. And evidently, he was like this little small town drug dealer. But from what everybody else was telling the cops, that he was also her pimp. So at that point, he became more of a suspect. So they interviewed him. He admitted that he was with her on the night she disappeared. He admitted that he drove her to a location and dropped her off for a rendezvous. And that's the last time he saw her. So we see another reenactment of, we don't see her getting dropped off. We just see her walking up to this car. So I guess she got dropped off there. And then this other guy came, almost like, well, the way he said, like in a rendezvous, it was almost like an appointment. So why would he drop her off to be picked up? Why would he just take her? Okay, maybe this guy don't want to, I don't know. Maybe they didn't go to a hotel or anything like that. But so the pimp dropped her off for her to be picked up by this dude we see in this trucker's cap. So they got a search warrant on this. Okay, he drives a van. So they executed a search warrant on this pimp's van. It was just a plain old white van. And we see the van. We see police tape around the van. And it looked like a work van. It's like a panel van. So it's not even like a creepy van. It's like a panel van with no windows on it. And it has it's not a Sprinter van. It's like an Econo line van. This looked like a company van. So the cop is saying, you can tell there was nothing in it. The carpet had been ripped out of it. Everything was out of it, and it was completely gutted. But this doesn't look like the type of vehicle that would have carpet. So I'm wondering if this is a reenactment and not the actual vehicle, because these type of vans don't have carpet. These are work vans. These are vans for like hauling shit, not people. So when he's saying everything was gutted and took out, like when I'm looking at this van, it don't look like the kind of van that would have carpet in it. And he's saying if there was any evidence in it, it's gone now. And he, you know, of course, said he don't have any idea what happened to Star. He stuck to his story. He dropped her off for her to be picked up. And that was it. So now we're at April 1997, Coral Springs, Florida. So we hear the cops saying they didn't develop another lead on this at all from any of the canvassing they were doing, any of the interviews they were doing, all the investigation they were doing. They didn't get any other leads until like a month later. And so West Palm Beach had a homicide and they called Coral Springs. And it was a prostitute who was strangled as well. It was a month before Star's murder. And her name was Sandra Walters. And she was left half naked behind an adult video store. And this was on February 25th. And she has similar characteristics to Star. And so we see these two pictures, similar characteristic, meaning what? Like, it looks definitely not. They must be talking about similar characteristics as far as the way they were murdered, because we see this one lady and then we see Star. And Star still looks young, but this other lady, she looked like, she kind of looked like if Star at 70. But we see this article by Donna Pesdera. That's the journalist that we've been hearing from in this documentary. And we see her headline. It says, same person may be responsible for killings. Police compare cases, find similarities. And so, okay, so they're talking about similarities as far as the murders. And so
we went to the West Palm Beach Police Department. We spoke with their detectives and we compared our case to theirs at that point. There were parallels. They were both prostitutes. They were both on drugs. They were both alcoholics. They did, in fact, have similar, you know, appearances and builds, but At that point, we weren't convinced that serial killers operate like this.
Okay, so now we're in November of 1997, and it's the day after Thanksgiving. This is several months after Star and Sandra Walters were found murdered. Another woman turned up dead in Broward County. So, and they're describing her as a prostitute, and she had similar features to Star and Sandra. So it's starting to look like this could be a serial killer who's targeting prostitutes. So her name was LaToya Williams. She was strangled, and they threw her body in the dumpster. So Pickering wanted to take a look and see if there were any similarities. And so we go back to Pesdera. She said by the time it was spring of 1998, there were six sex workers who were murdered. So six murdered prostitutes. And we see this article, and it looks like this was Pesdera's beat. She was following this case. And she has this article where she bullet pointed the deaths of these women. And it looked like it's Lisa Jeanette Palmer, Deborah Montgomery, Sandra K. Walters, Ellen Louise Stowe. Oh, so Star's real name is Ellen Louise. Okay. That's the first time they mentioned her real name, I guess. Maybe I forgot. And then Miranda Call Wilson. And they all have very, very similar characteristics. And then the last one is Tara Lynn Kirsten. So, and now they showing this same guy in that, it looks like a Caprice Classic or something like that with their baseball hat on. They keep alluding to this guy being the person. So we hear Holly Madison saying, all these murders, it must have been terrifying for sex workers. You know, there's possibly a serial killer out there that's targeting streetwalkers. So now we're in September, and Pickering get another call from West Palm Beach about a guy named Kevin Johnson. They had him in custody. And this is a black dude. The dude that they were showing in the car was a white dude with a cap on. Now they're showing this black dude. And he was arrested in connection with beating up a prostitute so severely that she ended up losing her eye. So they told Pickering that this guy's a monster. He may want to talk to him. Or no, he told them, this guy told them that he's a monster, and he became very, very violent when he smoked crack cocaine. So this Kevin Johnson guy told the detectives that he picked on sex workers and was glad he got caught because he felt like he had this monster inside of him and had so much rage against women that he was scared at what might happen next. Now, this don't sound like somebody who wants to murder. Or done a murder. But he admits that he had killed two prostitutes. He bludgeoned one to death and he stabbed the other. But I thought the other one was strangled. So of course this sounds like a plausible lead. This guy's admitted to killing two prostitutes, but he didn't confess to any other killings other than the ones that he was arrested for. So they started comparing cases. But he didn't come down to Fort Lauderdale at all. They couldn't track him back to Fort Lauderdale. You know, so they started looking at the way he picked him up, the way he killed him, and it's starting to look like it was all different, and it didn't seem like he was the guy. He was stabbing, and you know, stabbing is a pretty messy crime scene and versus strangulation. All the cases they have that are linked, the method of murder was strangulation. So they ruled him out for Star Stowe's murder or any other women that they were trying to link together. So at this point, police, they don't have anything close to leading them to Star's murder. Things start to die down a little bit. Things, you know, like everything that was hot, it started to cool off. So, but then tragedy strikes once again. Now we're at June 2000. This Cooper City, Florida. And so about 3 years after Star's murder, there were two women that were found murdered, like together. Again, this is in South Florida, but their bodies were found in black duffel bags on the side of the road. And we see this article, June 22nd, 2000. Two motorists discovered the body of Kimberly Dietz Livesey, 35, of Fort Lauderdale, inside a suitcase left along a road in Cooper City.
We see another one, August 9th, 2000. The body of Sia Dimas, 21, of Wilton Manors, is found in a duffel bag along a road near what is this? Dania Beach. And they were both found in duffel bags. Kevin Johnson's in jail, so it wasn't him. It's either a different serial killer. Well, it has to be. Well, it's definitely not Kevin Johnson because he's in jail. So, and we hear Pesdera saying it's either a different serial killer or a set of very tragic coincidences. So we see pictures of these two women, and they don't look like Star. I mean, these are not the best images, but they don't look like they don't look like if he had a look he was going for. I can't see it in these pictures. It's definitely a serial killer. It's gotta be. There's no way. Like all these similarities. There's no way. He's gotta be a serial killer. So, but I know a lot of times police are just from looking at past stuff, reading past stuff. I know they're not quick because they're causing so much fear and panic. That's like the last thing they want to say is there's a serial killer. That's like the last route they want to take. So now we're in 2011. Goddamn, we jumped way ahead. We're in 2011, South Florida. So we jumped 11 years. That was 2000, those last two bodies. So we're at 2011 now. And so in the murder cases of Kim and Sia, 12 years later, there's a big break in the case. And so we see this article. ID'd as a serial killer, who was Roberto Wagner Fernandez. And we see this article by Mark Freeman of the South Florida Sun Sentinel. Serial killer Robert Wagner Fernandez was a one-time flight attendant and a driver for tourists in South Florida. But he had a bloody history of killing and endangering women on at least two continents, investigators say. So through fingerprints, police were able to identify this guy. That's how they got him. So I guess he left Florida after the murders. He was a Brazilian national. So he was, he was a Brazilian citizen who was living in Miami. And so he was able to go back and forth. They found out that when he went back to Brazil, that's when the killing stopped. And so this sparked interest in the detective eyes because they're thinking maybe it was him that killed Star and the others. So they were able to figure out that this guy was not responsible for the death of Star Stowe because he was nowhere in the area at the time of her death. So another, they can't catch a break. So another dead end. I mean, they got him as a serial killer. He was murdering, but he didn't murder Star Stowe. But I guess he was the murderer of Sia and Kim. So the two that were found in those duffel bags. So they did link him to those murders. But
it's another disappointing turn for detectives. Regarding his link to the murders of Sia and Kim, well, their families would never see justice because Fernandez died in a plane crash in 2006.
Holy shit. So Star's case is still open. 25 years later, her case is still open. So they never found who killed her. So it's a cold case. So Pickering is saying he don't think it was a serial killer. He think it was somebody she knew. He don't think it was a stranger or a serial killer. Because he's saying there was no evidence of her fighting back, no defensive marks. There was no, you know, skin under her fingernail. None of that. None, you know, because normally, you know, you think of prostitutes as fight, like, even though they're on the street, they sort of put themselves out there in the vulnerable light. You tend to think they know how to take care of themselves on the street. But if it's somebody they know and they get caught off guard, then maybe that's different. So he says it seems like she willingly got in the car. Well, yeah, because her pimp dropped her off to get into a car. And he's saying he keep going back to the guy who was her pimp. Well, yeah, because technically, if nobody else saw her get in the other car, they keep showing this, that she's getting into this car with this guy with this hat on. But
like, where did they get that from? Like, where did they get that from? Even the pimp didn't say she got in the car. He said he dropped her off for a rendezvous. So where do they keep getting this part about her getting into a car? Technically, the pimp was the last person to see her. And they don't show her being dropped off by the pimp. They show her because they know for a fact she got dropped off because he told her. But they don't reenact that. They don't reenact her getting dropped off. They keep reenacting this assumption that she got in the car with somebody else, which is crazy. I don't get that. I don't understand how they made the decision. But so Pickering keeps saying he keep going back to her pimp. So he can't get it out of his head. He can't get that out of his head. No, because he's the last one that saw her. So Pazdera says she found out recently that the Coral Springs Police Department had reopened the case. Well, I thought it was never closed. Maybe they took it from cold case to active investigations. So the detectives took some DNA from Star's body at the time of her death. So it's possible that they may be able to find out who's responsible, you know, through new technologies and shit like that. Maybe something will come up. So she had DNA on her. So Pickering is saying in 97, DNA was still kind of new and it wasn't a lot they could do with it, but today they can. So, and plus the database is bigger now. So they got a lot more references. And he must be retired because he's saying he's sure the police department will resubmit it. Maybe there's a cold case team. You think they would put them in the documentary if there's like a new cold case team or something like that? You think they would have had them as part of the documentary?
Star Stowe's case is heartbreaking. Young, beautiful girl, big ambitions of going to the big city, gets there, falls into the cesspool of decadence, and is not prepared for it, and something terrible happens to her.
I can relate to her because I know what it feels like, you know, to have those dreams and to want to be a centerfold. And I know how it feels to live at the mansion and feel like the world is so insular and feel afraid.
If you're a young girl today, I think that Star would be a good example of what could happen if you go down the road of false promises of Playboy or buy into that dream. It ruins you. There's no way out. It's just a tragedy. It's sad.
And that's it for this episode. Send all your questions and comments to docutalkthrough@gmail.com. That's docutalkthrough@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.